fun. Thank you. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Bill. After an introduction like that, I should just say thanks. It's been great to be here and walk off the stage. You've got a great attorney general, a great leader, a leader in the country and a leader here in Michigan. So thank you for that service. And I want to begin by saying thank you, not just to your great attorney general, but thank you, not only all for coming out here today, but as a number of you have mentioned to me, thank you for the support you gave us, particularly a couple of years ago, because just across the lake, we had a little election going on in 2012. I have a weird distinction. Someday my grandchildren will look back and realize I'm the only governor in American history to be elected twice in the same term. And you all helped us. Yeah. You helped us in that recall election in 2012. So many people sent money, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks, whatever it was. Many people did that. Many people literally came around the lake and said, we're going to come over and knock on doors or make phone calls. Some people made phone calls here as well. Most importantly, though, a lot of people here and others like you across this country prayed for Kenneth and I and our family. We appreciate that more than words can express. So thank you for having done that. I wouldn't be standing here today without the help of many, if not everybody, in this room. And so I appreciate that. It's kind of interesting. Last Christmas time, around before about a week or so of Christmas, we started thinking about looking back over the last 4 years and trying to figure out, you know, a little bit of what God's plan was and all that. And somewhat of God's providence looked at figuring, you know, between the protests and the protests and the protests. At one point 4 years ago, literally we had 100,000 protesters in and around our Capitol. We had death threats. We had nonsense. We had protesters not just in the Capitol, but in front of our actual family home, where my kids were still in high school at the time. My parents had moved in to be with them as well as we commuted back and forth. We went through all that. We went through the Senate recalls and the Supreme Court races and eventually my recall along with our lieutenant governor. And then last year, along with your governor here and our friend Rick Scott down in Florida, we were the top targets in America. In fact, for our three races, the National Union shifted $300 million out of their federal accounts to the states just to go after the three of us here. The good news is all three of us won. And I think it was a telling sign because in all three of our states are battleground states. I think it's a great message for what Bill talked about thinking ahead to 2016, because I believe there's going to be a tremendous turnaround in America, but it's going to take a new chief executive. I'm excited about the future because we've got a House, particularly after last fall's election, not only have Republicans in charge of the United States Senate, we had some pretty dynamic, new, reform-minded people like Joni Ernst in Iowa, Tom Cotton down in Arkansas, or Cory Gardner out in Colorado. I'm excited about that because you saw it here in Michigan, we saw it in Wisconsin, we saw it in Ohio, we saw it in Florida, we saw 4 or 5 years ago when our states were in the tank. What happened? Voters put in place common sense, Republican, conservative, reform-minded leaders out there, and what happened? Our states turned around. I know in our state, for example, when I was running in 2010, January of 2010, you know what the unemployment rate was in Wisconsin? 9.2%. Last week, we announced it was down in March to 4.6%. How about that for a change? We're particularly proud, too, when we talk about unemployment, because it's not just that unemployment is down, but unlike the federal level, labor participation rates in our state are over 68%. That means more than two-thirds of our people work, which is really important, because when you hear the president talking about unemployment going down, and I'm glad it's down to 5.5%, but the labor participation rate is the lowest it's been since the 1970s. What that means is a lot of people are no longer listed on the unemployment rates because they stopped looking for work. Now, we can't have that. We can't have that in America. We need to have people hungry to live that piece of the American dream. And so as I think about not just what we've done, but what other states, Michigan, Ohio, many others across this country have done, it gives me hope that with the right leadership in Washington, we can turn our country around. And let me tell you a little bit about three specific areas why I think that's important. Three simple areas: growth, reform, and safety. When it comes to growth, I think it's incredibly important. A lot of times we hear Republicans in Washington talking about our budgets. And I think we need to balance our budget. In our state, we took a $3.6 billion budget deficit, turned it into a surplus each of the last 4 years. In fact, our next budget we're working on right now ends with about a half a billion dollar surplus. Our pension's the only one fully funded in the country. Our rainy day fund's 165 times bigger than we took off. All those are good things. But I think you get there not just by cutting things. You get there by growth. And growth doesn't mean government. You see, that's the big mistake this president and people like Hillary Clinton make, is you listen to them, they think you grow by growing Washington. That's not just a theory. Last year alone, reports showed that 6 of the top 10 wealthiest counties in America, you know where they're at? In and around Washington, D.C. Or as I call it, 68 square miles surrounded by reality. So it's nice to get out to where everybody else lives in reality. But they honestly, you know, Obama and Clinton think you grow the economy by growing Washington. I think the rest of us in this country believe that you grow the economy in cities and towns and villages all across America, that people create jobs, not the government, and it's about time to get the government out of the way so the people can grow the economy. You know, two of the biggest challenges out there are regulations and taxation. And I think we need to rein both in. We need to, not only for individuals, but for employers, for job creators, we need to be competitive in the world again when it comes to our tax code. We need to have a regulatory environment that allows us to enforce common sense, but not bureaucratic red tape. And sometimes people in my state will ask, in our capital in particular, they'll say, well, Governor, why do you focus so much on reducing the tax burden? I'm proud to say in the last 4 years, we've cut taxes $2 billion on income. All income tax rates are down, employer rates are down, and property taxes are now lower today than they were 4 years ago when we first took over as governor. So we're proud of that. In fact, I don't know of anybody else to say that in America. But sometimes I'll have people in our capital who will say, you know, why do you focus so much on lowering taxes? And I'll tell you a simple story why. You see, back in February 6th, my wife, Clinette, and I were married it was our 22nd wedding anniversary. And other than the fact that it's unbelievable that Clinette put up with me for that long, I always tell this story that kind of explains this, what my belief is about taxes, but by telling you something I did right after I was first married to my wife, Clinette. I made a critical mistake. I went to a place called Kohl's Department Store near our house, and I brought something for the price it was marked at. Now, anybody who's ever been to Kohl's knows that everything's on sale at Kohl's. So now, over the years, I've listened enough to my wife, and I know if I'm going to go buy a shirt at Kohl's, I go to the rack that says it was $29.99, and now it's marked down to $19.99. And then I get out the insert from the Sunday newspaper with the little scratch-off that gets me another 15 or 20% off. Or even better, I get the flyer we get in the mail sometimes at home that gives me 15 or 20, if I'm really lucky, 30%, right? You know what I'm talking about. And you take that up to the front cash register, and then Connect usually pulls out of her purse some Kohl's cash, and next thing you know, they're paying me to buy that shirt, right? Right? Yeah, you do that. You know what I'm talking about. So how does a company like Kohl's make money? How do they make money? Bingo, they make it off of volume, right? They could sell a few of those shirts for $29.99 and go so far, or they lower the cost, broaden the base, and they make more money off the volume. That's what I think about your money, the taxpayer's money. We can charge you higher rates, and a few of you might be able to afford to pay it, or we can lower the rates, broaden the base, more people are part of the economy, we see revenues go up even while rates go down, and the economy gets better for everyone. I call that the Kohl's curve. Out of deference to my friend Art Laffer, Laffer curve is what we called it during Reagan. It's actually the Kohl's curve, because I think everybody in America has been to Kohl's, knows what I'm talking about when we talk about the Kohl's curve. That's what I think about the taxpayers' money. And so for us going forward in America, we need to find a way to help grow the economy by lowering the cost of doing business so that more jobs, more opportunities, more wages are going up. We can build a better economy by doing that, not just through tax reform and regulatory reform, but by getting rid of Obamacare and putting patients back in charge of healthcare decisions again. By having energy policies that are all of the above and don't put a burden on manufacturing, be it here in Michigan or Wisconsin or throughout the industrial Midwest, but instead say, you know, thanks to God, we've been blessed with abundant supplies of energy here in America and across our continent. Why not use that? If we do all those things, I think we can get up to 4.5% to 5% growth in the next term. We're way below that right now. I think it's not unrealistic to think we can't get there. But we've got to have a focus with a leader in Washington who works with our Congress to put in place policies that empower the people of this country to create more jobs, more opportunity, to help raise wages for all Americans who want to work. Secondly, I think we need to focus not only on growth, but on reform. Again, this is where there is a stark contrast between us and people like Obama and Clinton. You listen to the president, you listen to Hillary Clinton, you think that they measure success in government by how many people are dependent on the government, right? How many people are on Medicaid and food stamps and unemployment. We should measure success by just the opposite, by how many people are no longer dependent on the government. No longer dependent on the government. Because we understand that true freedom and prosperity do not come from the mighty hand of the government. They come from empowering people to live their own lives and control their own destinies, the dignity that is born of work. We're the ones who stand for that. When I think about growing up as a kid, I grew up in South Central Wisconsin. It's actually kind of funny. My first job was washing dishes at the Countryside Restaurant. Bill, you'll appreciate this. My second job was at McDonald's in Dulles. And the reason people appreciate this is, Bill, because you know my friend Paul Ryan. Paul grew up down the road from me in Janesville. He was flipping burgers at the McDonald's in Janesville. I was flipping them in Dulles. The only difference is his manager told him he didn't have the interpersonal skills to work the front cash register, so he just flipped burgers in the back. True. You have to kid Paul about that in the future. But I think about that growing up. You know, I think about, you know, the blessings I had to learn from my family and my community, the value of hard work. My parents, my dad was a preacher in a small town. My mom was a part-time secretary and bookkeeper. My grandparents on my mom's side were farmers that didn't have indoor plumbing, so my mother went off to junior high school. My dad's dad, Grandpa Walker, was a machinist for 42 years at Barbara Coleman in Rockford, Illinois, just over the border. When I think about my parents and my grandparents, I think how blessed I was, but I wasn't blessed with fame or fortune. I was blessed with the belief that if you work hard and you play by the rules, you can do and be anything you want in America. That's the American dream, and we need to fight for it. And finally, in addition to talking about growth and reform, I want to talk for a moment about something that has become an increasing passion of mine, and that's safety. Safety. Now, some people call it national security. I don't call it that, because national security is something you read about page 6 or 7 of the newspaper. Safety is something you feel right here. When I watched the videotape of a Jordanian pilot being burned alive in a cave, I feel that in my heart, my soul. When I watched the beheadings of Egyptians and others around the world just because they're Christian and taken hostage in the Middle East, that's something I feel in my heart, in my soul. And I think Americans now have had an awakening over the past year because of those videos and of those images that suddenly it's not just about national security. It's not something distant in a foreign country. It's something you feel and you worry about. Because you think about that and you watch those images and you realize it's not just happening in the Middle East. It happened in France. It happened in Belgium. Heck, it happened up in Canada. You start thinking about just the other day over the weekend down in Texas. We had somebody call up, and we don't know all the facts yet, but where they had this discussion that obviously offended some, but it was open to the free speech, and someone comes up and starts shooting off on the way in. You start wondering, it can happen anywhere out there. And what frustrates me to no end is we've got a president right now, and someone who advised him for 4 years, and Hillary Clinton, who don't have a very strong approach when it comes to the rest of the world. We got a president who drew a line in the sand and allowed people to cross it. We got a president who in the last year called ISIS the JV squad, who called Yemen a success story, who calls Iran a place we can do business with. Think about that. Iran. I got a good friend by the name of Kevin Herman, who lives over in north central Wisconsin, Wausau, Wisconsin. You know, he was the youngest Marine held hostage in Iran for 444 days. I still remember as a kid putting yellow ribbons around our tree in the front of our house because of those hostages. I just met a little bit earlier this morning with the mother and sister from right here in Michigan, whose brother and son has been held hostage in Iran since August of 2011. He is a former Marine. He served his country. He was taken hostage. And it's the same country that our president says we need to negotiate with, who's holding someone like that Marine hostage over there. We need a commander-in-chief who once and for all is going to stand up and take charge. We need a leader in America who's going to once and for all tell the American people and the rest of the world that radical Islamic terrorism is a threat and that we're going to do something about it. We need a president who recognizes that Israel is actually an ally and starts treating them as such. And we need a president who will look the American people in the eye and have the courage to tell them something that a lot of politicians may not. And that is that this is not going to take a day or a week or a month or maybe even a year. But as we look at the evidence that continues to grow, it is not a question of if an attempt is made on American soil again. It is when an attempt is made on American soil again. And I don't know about you, but on behalf of my children and yours, I'd rather take the fight to them instead of waiting till they bring the fight to us. We need to be a leader in the world again. And so there's a lot at stake in this next election. There's a lot at stake, but I'm an optimist. And I'm an optimist not just because of what we've seen here in the Midwest in terms of what a positive change can make, what a transformational effort can happen with the right common sense conservative leadership in our states. That certainly is powerful in and of itself. But I'm an optimist for the future of this country for a reason bigger than just the last few years here in the Midwest. I love history, and so when I think about the history of this country, it gives me comfort that with the right leadership, we can make America great again. You see, as a kid growing up in Delavan, that small town I mentioned in south central Wisconsin, I loved history. I loved history so much, I thought of our founders like superheroes, bigger than life. Maybe I'm a little geeky, but that's what I thought of our founders like. And as a family, we never got a chance to go out to Philadelphia. So years later, after I was married, Tonette and I got a chance to go out to Philadelphia. We got up early in the morning, we went out with the National Park Service, we went by the Liberty Bell, and then we went into the Independence Hall. And if you've ever been there, you know it's not much bigger than the area we're standing in right now. And I'd gotten up so early in the morning, I was so excited, I expected to go in there and be blown away. Blown away, because I mean, here were the founders. This is where they did the amazing things that they did. And as the sun was coming up and the light came in the room, I realized, looking at those chairs and looking at the desk, that these were ordinary people. Ordinary people had sat there. Ordinary people who had done something quite extraordinary. You see, these were people that didn't just risk their political careers for what took place there. They didn't just risk their business ventures. These were patriots who had risked their lives, for the freedoms we hold dear today. See, it's moments like that that make me realize that what makes America great, what makes us exceptional, what makes us the greatest country in the history of the world, has been all throughout our nation's history. In times of crisis, be it fiscal or economic, be it military or spiritual, what makes America amazing has been all throughout those times in our history. There have been men and women of courage who've been willing to stand up and think more about the future of their children and their grandchildren than they thought about their own futures. Ladies and gentlemen here today, I would tell you that I believe that this is one of those moments in American history. I believe that this is a time when we can look back to future generations and say, we were there. We heeded the call. We did what was required to make America great again. We have done it in the past. We can do it in the future. With your help, with your assistance here in this state and across this great country, we can make America great again. Thank you for letting me come up here.